Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Joe Palca reporting. Secretary of Defense outlines new plans in Iraq. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter announced Monday in Baghdad that the U.S. is providing more than 200 additional troops and several Apache attack helicopters to assist Iraqi forces in their fight to retake the northern city of Mosul from Islamic State. Additionally, he says,
We're going to provide financial assistance to the Peshmerga. This with agreement of the Prime Minister Abadi, which is how we do everything. Here to bolster what has been, namely the Peshmerga, one of the most effective fighting forces against ISIL.
Iraqi forces began an offensive to retake the ISIS stronghold on March 24th. A senior defense official says a total of 8 Apache attack helicopters will be sent to aid in the battle. According to Secretary Carter, regarding the overall effort,
as you know, this is on top of what we're already doing, which is providing air power, command and control, other fires, training, sustainment, logistics, the very important, by we here now, I mean the United States, but also our coalition partners.
For more on this story, visit our website at voanews.com. Just before daybreak in Ecuador, where rescue workers utilized giant earth-moving machinery to clear away debris in order to find more survivors in the 7.8 magnitude earthquake. The death toll from the massive quake has now risen to 350. In the meantime, across the Pacific, 2 earthquakes on Japan's Kyushu Island have left at least 42 dead. This is VOA News. Human Rights Watch commended Saudi Arabia on its new regulation that strips power from the often criticized religious police force. The Saudi cabinet passed the measure last week, which prevents religious police from stopping, arresting, chasing, or detaining people. The Council of Ministers also requested the religious police, formerly known as the Commission for the Promotion of Virtue and Prevention of Vice, to carry official identification showing name, position, work hours, and branch. The new guidelines say the only police and drug squad officers have the jurisdiction to make arrests. A collection of Syrian rebel groups said today that they were launching a battle in response to pro-government violations of a cessation of hostilities agreement that has been in place since late February. Both sides have been accusing the others of repeated violations during the past 2 months. In the meantime, in Switzerland,
Thank you.
United Nations Special Envoy Staffan de Mistura greets China's Special Envoy Xi Xiaoyan for another day of talks. China's Special Envoy?
I said to Mr. de Mistura, on different occasions, to me, diplomacy is the art of making compromises. So during the discussions and the negotiations, all parties will have to consider the requests from the other side and try to reach consensus so a solution can be found.
Hundreds of East African migrants are believed dead after their boat capsized in the eastern Mediterranean. Now, the incident happened on April 8th, that's 10 days ago, but was first reported by the BBC late Sunday night. Witnesses and survivors told VOA on Monday that the vessel overturned while carrying as many as 500 people. An unknown number swam to boats nearby and were later picked up and taken to Greece. Ethiopian national Musa Mohammed Adams said he's one of the few migrants who survived the tragedy. He told VOA's Horn of Africa service that the boat capsized after he and about 200 other migrants came on board from a smaller boat that departed Egypt a day and a half earlier. A court in Kyiv has convicted 2 Russian servicemen captured in eastern Ukraine of terrorism and other crimes and sentenced them each to 14 years in prison. The court on Monday found Alexander Alexandrov and his commander, Yevgeny Yerofiev, guilty of waging a war of aggression against Ukraine. Now, both Alexandrov and Yerofiev acknowledged being Russian servicemen, but Russia's defense ministry said they had resigned from active duty and traveled to Ukraine on their own. They could, according to reports, serve as a trade for the Ukrainian pilot who's being held prisoner. Joe Palca in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
More than 400 migrants are feared to have drowned in the Mediterranean while trying to cross by boat from Egypt to Italy.
That's Antonella Sferraza reporting on the latest migrant boat tragedy on the Mediterranean. Details coming up. Also, South Sudan rebel leader and first vice president designate Riek Machar is expected to return to Juba tomorrow. And the top UN human rights official says there's been a sharp increase in the use of torture and ill treatment in Burundi. We'll have these stories and more and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, once again, there's tragedy on the Mediterranean Sea. More boat sinkings have been reported as migrants and refugees from Somalia and Ethiopia tried to make their way to Europe in recent days. From Palermo, Sicily, reporter Antonella Sferraza has more on that story and other migrant-related news.
Europe is facing a new migrant tragedy. More than 400 migrants are feared to have drowned in the Mediterranean while trying to cross by boat from Egypt to Italy. The migrants involved in this tragedy were on board four boats. The incident was confirmed by the Somali ambassador, but the Italian authorities are now contacting the Egyptian government to know more about this terrible tragedy. The tragedy, as we know, comes exactly a year after the worst migrant disaster in the Mediterranean for decades. It was the 19th of April 2015 when 800 migrants, many of them locked in the hold, died when their boat capsized at the sea just in front of Lampedusa off the coast of Sicily. So we are once again facing a tragedy, although we have to say that with a few bodies recovered, many deaths are never officially confirmed. The UN Refugees Agency estimates that more than 3,000 migrants died in the Mediterranean Sea last year, but nobody knows how many migrants drown every day. The tragedy comes also after a few days Pope Francis' trip to Lesbos in Greece. As we know, the Pope made an emotional visit into the heart of Europe's migrant crisis on Saturday, and he took 12 Muslim refugees from Syria, including six children, with him back to Rome aboard the papal plane. Now they are hosted in Rome in a house of a Catholic association. So in Lesbos, in Greece, the Pope once again renewed his plea for responsibility and solidarity. He said once again that migrants are not numbers, but people with faces, names and stories. As he has done before, he condemned the European approach to the issue, in particular the closing of the borders, in general this approach based on rejection. The Pope is really very concerned about the whole situation. He takes the issue very seriously. And in fact, when he became Pope, his first trip in 2013 was to Lampedusa, where, as we know, the issue of mass migrants is very serious. Nonetheless, we have to say that some critics say that this may be seen as a political stand, since helping 12 families does not solve the problem. Of course, the Pope say that his gesture was a drop in the ocean, but some critics stress that the Vatican maybe could do a little bit more.
That's Antonella Sferraza reporting from Palermo, Sicily. As Antonella mentioned, it's the one-year anniversary of the sinking of a ship in the Mediterranean with 800 migrants on board. Today we hear that the Italian government plans to raise that ship and bring it to a Sicilian port. The ship, which still contains bodies, lies at a depth of about 360 meters. The Italian premier has promised to recover the bodies out of respect for the dead. In other migrant and refugee news, a German Muslim leader says there are parallels between the alternative for Germany Nationalist Party and the Nazis. The AP reports Ayman Mazik made the comment after an official of the AfD party said that Islam is not compatible with Germany's constitution. Mazik is head of Germany's Central Council of Muslims. He told the local radio that for the first time since Hitler's Germany, there is a party that discredits an entire religious community and existentially threatens it. Meanwhile, in Germany, an NGO is trying to integrate migrants one at a time through the Start with a Friend program. The AFP reports the organization teams up new arrivals with local volunteers. The NGO says the goal is to help migrants better understand Germany, help them find jobs, and assist them in applying for asylum. Over 1 million migrants and refugees arrived in Germany last year. The Prime Minister of Ethiopia says the death toll in Friday's attacks by gunmen near the South Sudan border has risen to more than 200. He says over 100 children were kidnapped. Haile Mariam Desalegn addressed the nation yesterday to announce that 208 had died and 75 were wounded in the town of Jakwa in Gambela province. He says the gunmen escaped and took with them 102 children and 2,000 heads of livestock. Government spokesman Getachew Reda told the Associated Press the attackers were members of South Sudan's Merle tribe. The AP reports that about 60 of the gunmen have been killed. The Prime Minister says Ethiopian Defense Forces are in pursuit of the raiders and they are discussing with South Sudan officials efforts to apprehend them. Ethiopia hosts more than 284,000 South Sudanese refugees, but refugee camps were not a target of the raids. The nationalities of the victims have not been identified. Once again, the arrival of South Sudan rebel leader and vice president-designate Riek Machar in Juba has been delayed. It was first thought he would arrive today after a number of delays, but now he is expected to return tomorrow. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe calls Machar's return a milestone in the implementation of the peace agreement signed last year between Machar and South Sudan President Salva Kiir. A spokesman for the rebel advance team says a lack of flight clearance will delay the arrival until tomorrow morning. Makwe says Machar will be inaugurated as the country's first vice president immediately following his arrival, marking the beginning of a 30-month transitional period. Current vice president of South Sudan, James Wand Iga, will become second vice president when the new government is sworn in. The peace deal ended more than 2 years of civil war, which came about after Mr. Kiir accused Machar of an attempted coup. Among the key provisions is the establishment of a national unity government. The civil war, however, continues. Just last week, fighting broke out in western Equatoria State between government and rebel forces. The UN estimates the nearly 2.5-year-old conflict has killed at least 50,000 people. The top UN human rights official says there's been a sharp increase in the use of torture and ill treatment in Burundi. Zayed Rad Al-Hussein also says there are worrying reports of the existence of illegal detention facilities in Bujumbura and in the countryside. He says at least 345 new cases of torture and ill treatment have been recorded. He says since April 2015, nearly 600 people have been ill-treated or tortured. Al-Hussein calls the figures shocking and probably an underestimate. The human rights chief says recent detainees were beaten with belts, iron rods or sharp objects, or burned. He says the perpetrators of torture and ill-treatment have so far enjoyed total impunity. Last April, violence broke out after President Nkurunziza announced he would seek a third term. More than 400 people have been killed, 80,000 have been displaced within the country, and 250,000 have fled to neighboring countries.
Nearly 12,000 Mozambicans seeking asylum have crossed the border into Malawi since December. There was excitement as the first buses arrived to move them to the newly reopened Luwane camp. These 81 people, mainly women and children, have been camped in the Sanje district of southern Malawi. The buses traveled 320 kilometers to the camp. Upon arrival, the UN Refugee Agency gave them some food and utensils and assigned each family a plot. Tents were already set up. Before its official closure in 2007, the Luwane camp hosted more than 300,000 Mozambican refugees who had fled civil war between 1977 and 1992. The people being relocated here today are from Zambezia province, one of five opposition strongholds, where there has been sporadic fighting since the disputed 2014 elections. Increased tensions late last year pushed thousands of civilians to flee. Pencil Loponi says pro-government Frelimo fighters were torching houses and killing people they accused of harboring opposition Renamo fighters. He says he was with two friends coming from the market. He says the Frelimo soldiers accused them of being Renamo and pointed guns at their heads. He says he showed them his voting certificate as identification and was spared. But his two friends had nothing to show and were shot dead. The government says Renamo fighters are attacking civilians to turn them against the government. As the asylum seekers were being moved Saturday, Mozambican state media reported President Filipe Nyusi called on Renamo fighters to lay down their weapons and come to dialogue. The reopening of Luwane camp has been controversial for some. The governor of one affected district in Mozambique told state radio there in March that there is no conflict. He said people were fleeing drought and food shortages. Arriving at Luwane camp, 83-year-old Edesi Myson says this is not true. She says her family had to abandon their pigs, goats and maize fields. She says there is no peace in their country, so how can they return home? She says as she is speaking here, fighting continues in their area. Myson says she and her family are thanking the Malawi government for taking them to this camp. The UN Refugee Agency says the relocation exercise continues all week. A UNHCR field officer told VOA that asylum seekers, as well as the host community, will have access to health facilities and a school there. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Neno, Malawi.
Eighteen past the hour, you were listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. British Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond is in Tripoli to meet with officials of the new Government of National Accord. Hammond has pledged another $12 million for technical assistance. Over the weekend, diplomats from France and Germany also visited Libya. The European Union is boosting support for the UN-backed government. The EU is offering to train Libyan security forces and help ensure the stability of the Central Bank, National Oil Corporation, and the Libyan Investment Authority. The unity government would replace two rival governments, one in Tripoli, the other in Tobruk, that have been operating since the fall of leader Muammar Gaddafi. Experts say many extremist groups take advantage of poor economic conditions or political turmoil to lure members to join their ranks. Among those being targeted are the Tuareg people in North Africa. Akhil Shak is a spokesperson for the Tuareg Youth Movement of Libya. VOA's Mohamed El Shenawi asked him how terror groups have affected Tuareg life and what can be done to counter their extremist ideology.
The world now is troubled by the extremists and this kind of extremism flourishing in North Africa, particularly in the Sahara for the first time in the history. And we are the first people to be affected because Tuareg people are practicing a very middle or moderate Islam. But we find ourselves since 2003, when these groups came to North Africa for the first time, the culture, the history, the traditions of the Tuareg people are starting to change and change again. Because these groups are well-funded and using media, and they have access to smartphones, and they have loyalists everywhere. And at the same time, the Tuareg people, or we can say the population that lives in the Sahara, do not have this kind of media. So we can save our people if we got some support and setting some media stations like radios or TV stations. We can enlighten people about these people because they think this is proper Islam, but that's not reality, as everyone knows.
So what role do you see for Tuareg and the indigenous population of the region in combating extremism and terrorism?
Well, these groups flourishing and growing up in Africa, particularly in the Sahara, where the Tuareg indigenous people are based. As everybody knows, the Tuareg are scattered between almost 8 countries, Libya, south of Algeria, and north of Mali, and west of Morocco. They are all scattered all the region. But, you know, ignoring them has let some people join these groups, and jobless young Tuareg as well following these groups. And there is no anything also to enlighten them and to give them proper information about this kind of terrorism. So the Tuareg has to be listened to. The Tuareg have to be involved in any operation in North Africa. Tuareg can play a very, very strong role in combating terrorism.
Akhil, you are originally from Libya. What role can the Tuareg play in restoring stability in Libya and fighting the expansion of terrorist groups, so-called ISIS?
ISIS, Al-Qaeda, I'm putting them in one box. They are all the same, actually. If we are talking particularly about Libya, as you know, the ISIS is based in the north, not in the south, where the Tuareg people are based. But yes, they are coming, they will be there. As I said, the Tuareg people or indigenous people, the Amazigh in general, or other groups who are the neighbors of these indigenous people, can fight, can together. But as I said, they need support, they need trust. As you know, today in Libya, we have almost three governments. These three governments are fighting on the power. We are living in a mess today. But if we encourage the youth people in these regions and give them a trust, finance them and give them support, they can fight back the terrorists. And I am sure they will defeat them. But as long as we are ignoring them, as I mentioned it earlier, I don't think this is going to stop ISIS or any other group.
Akhlishka is a spokesperson for the Tuareg Youth Movement of Libya. He spoke to VOA's Mohamed El Shenawi. More than 240 people have died from recent yellow fever outbreaks in Angola and the Democratic Republic of Congo. To cope with the emergency, the World Health Organization has drawn on vaccine supplies that had been scheduled for use elsewhere. To replace the vaccine stocks, the WHO is urging manufacturers to speed up production. VOA's David Arnold reports.
WHO Chief Dr. Margaret Chan visited Luanda earlier this month to stress the importance of responding to the outbreak that killed over 200 people in the Angolan capital. Yellow fever is a hemorrhagic fever transmitted by an infected mosquito. WHO estimates that more than 60,000 people die of the fever each year. There's no special treatment for the fever, but there is a vaccine that is safe, affordable, and lifelong. Health officials in Angola implemented an emergency vaccination program to respond to the outbreak. However, the demand drained existing emergency supplies and depleted supplies intended to be used for other prevention programs. Dr. William Perea is head of the World Health Organization's Yellow Fever Program. He says those vaccine supplies are slowly being restored.
A routine immunization, which draws about 20 to 25 million doses per year. And we maintain a stockpile for emergencies that is around 6 million. The situation now is the stockpile was depleted. Now, in order to replenish it, we have to delay routine immunization. With the production that it was intended for the preventive campaigns, especially in the second half of the year, is going to be repurposed to make sure that the outbreak spread to other countries, we have enough vaccine to respond to.
Perea says emergency measures in Luanda have had a very significant effect on a very dangerous situation.
The vaccination of Luanda is finished. They have vaccinated almost the entire city now, and that is reflected in the number of cases that have been reported that are significantly decreased. However, there are local transmission now confirmed in other 5 provinces, and 2 of them have already started the vaccination campaign. Vaccination campaign in Luanda is low for many reasons, mainly logistical, and the lessons learned from what has happened in Luanda are being taken into account.
Perea says there are no reports of other local transmissions, but at least 2 other African countries are being monitored.
So far, we don't have any other countries in Africa with local transmission. Now, we know that in Uganda, we have some local transmission that is not related to the Angolan outbreak. In central Congo, we know that there is some local transmission, and we need to proceed with vaccination in that area, which is around 400,000 people. And we are waiting for a confirmation of local transmission in neighboring Kinshasa. If that is confirmed, there will be need to vaccinate around 600,000 people in that area. Vaccine, the stockpile that we have now, which is around 9 to 10 million, will be able to cover those needs.
Perea says the shortage of vaccines is not a new phenomenon to WHO or to the health ministries of many African countries. The problem lies in the supply chain, the limited number of vaccine manufacturers, and the difficulties in making the vaccine.
There is very few manufacturers. You know, yellow fever vaccine is a cheap vaccine with a limited market, only tropical areas in Africa and Latin America. And we have a lot of discussions with the manufacturers to see how they can scale up production in order to increase the stockpiles available. They have a plan to increase from here to September, October, the production, which will, month by month, give us several millions of vaccine.
The vaccine is made from the eggs of the mosquito, and it takes months to produce. Perea believes there are now enough doses to handle current demand.
For the time being, yes. If the needs increase for any reason, the thing will be different. But what we are trying to do is to figure out what will the needs to cover in the next months to make sure that we'll have enough vaccine to comply with it. The yellow fever vaccine is not an easy vaccine to produce. It takes a long time to produce. From the moment you start incubating the virus in the eggs till the moment you release the vaccine and it's ready for use, it takes 6 months or more. That's why it's so important that we very closely work with manufacturers.
Countries where yellow fever is a concern appear to have enough vaccine to manage for the time being. However, the limited number of drug manufacturers willing to produce adequate supplies may continue to challenge the health ministries and the World Health Organization. David Arnold, VOA News in Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Wagner Roberts, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa. We'll discuss the 2016 World Bank IMF Spring Meetings. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
The Voice of America, VOA.